Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
As is often the case, we give companies a reasonable amount of time to address what we're asking them to address, to adjust their operations, to start testing or making other choices.
USDA Deputy Undersecretary for Food Safety, Sandra Eskin.
In this case, it's a 12-month period. So 12 months after the determination is published, we at FSIS will begin testing these products in the plants where they're made, where they're processed. And again, companies, some of them test already, others perhaps not, for all of them to come up to speed in what they can do to ensure that people don't get sick from eating these products.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Our bond rates are higher than 13 other industrialized countries. Should that tell you what the bond markets think about us?
Representative David Schweikert is from Arizona, sounding the alarm on the nation's debt.
This is actually a more recent phenomena, seeing this differential with this many. Which, what does that tell you about what the world thinks about our controlling inflation, about our governance, our demographics, our tax policy? And when you saw last week the IMF, when the IMF is putting in their international report on debt and taking a swipe at the United States, saying two things that were fascinating. They're worried about us and our scale of borrowing, and the fact that United States and China are the two big economies sopping up much of the world credit. That we're actually crushing much of the developing world because we're consuming all the money that would be helping them build up their economies. There's some ugly stuff in here. So for all my Democrat colleagues who run around and talk about the morality of helping the developing world, turns out our voracious appetite to spend and spend and spend and spend and spend and not tell the truth, interest in healthcare are our primary drivers. What are you willing to do to help us change the price of healthcare, not the financing of it? Obamacare was a financing bill. Medicare for All is a financing bill. They don't actually change the cost by using technology to make people healthier and crash the price of healthcare. But even when the IMF is going at us, maybe we should think about, that's sort of embarrassing. When you actually have people that, I've never met him, I know he's a controversial, I don't think he's any Republican. When Larry Fink in his, you know, shareholder newsletter is actually putting out information saying he's worried about U.S. borrowing and the scale of it. When you all saw Jamie Dimon in his comments, he's worried about it. Don't listen to me, but maybe some of the people that have armies of economists that work for them, maybe they're worth actually giving some mind to instead of some idiot on social media who's making crap up. You got to understand, as if you have someone also do this, David, we're just going to grow ourselves out of the debt. Okay. Showed you a chart a moment ago that last Friday put out the official calculation. It may get updated one or two more times, but the first quarter fell down to 1.6. But here's how you got to understand this. Here's functionally our borrowing. This is publicly held debt. This is the GDP growth from 2023. Okay. Until this growth is actually beyond the borrowing, because you go out and borrow $1 trillion, we had to pay interest on $1 trillion, right? GDP, the size of our economy, grows $1 trillion. We only get 17-18% of that in tax receipts. Okay, are you with me? So when someone says, well, we're going to borrow $1 trillion, but we'll grow the economy $1 trillion, the math doesn't work that way. I've shown you these charts before of when we've had very high marginal tax rates, we get about 18% of GDP. When we've had very low marginal tax rates, we get about 18% of GDP in taxes to the U.S. government. And there's a whole formula why that works that way. You need the growth. You desperately have to have the growth. I can't make the math work without really good growth, but it doesn't come anywhere close. It doesn't come anywhere mathematically close to closing the gap of our borrowing.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We've kind of seen some things escalate here quickly with highly pathogenic avian influenza, also called HPAI.
Tyler Cozen's ag economist with the Livestock Marketing Information Center.
It's been kind of a headline in the news, most notably for its spread from migratory bird populations into the dairy cattle population. So based on latest data from USDA APHIS, they're reporting 33 confirmed cases of HPAI in dairy cattle, and that's across 8 states. The interesting thing with where these cases have been reported in those 8 states, you have about 5 states in the West and Midwest, Idaho, Kansas, New Mexico, South Dakota, and Texas. But then you also have cases that are also reported in Michigan, Ohio, and North Carolina. So geographically, the confirmed cases of HPAI in dairy cattle are spread out across a good portion of the U.S. And I think the other thing to note is they're also spread out across multiple U.S. flyways. And I think this is an indication of a large spread of this HPAI across the U.S. So it's something that is definitely worth monitoring for sure. You know, and with the spread in dairy cattle, this has brought about some recent news releases from USDA, specifically USDA, in an effort to stem any further spread of HPAI. This week, USDA APHIS issued a federal order which requires testing and reporting of dairy cattle. So this order further states that on April 29th, all dairy cattle will be required to have a negative HPAI test before the cattle can be transported across state lines. The test results must come from an approved National Animal Health Laboratory network. Also in this order, USDA also stated that there will likely be additional conditions set forth by APHIS in effort to combat further spread of this HPAI strain, which is H5N1. And they actually issued one of those actually on April 26th. One of those conditions is an amendment specifically to their animal disease traceability regulations. And that regulation now requires electronic ID for certain cattle and bison moving interstate. And in that note, they reported that the final rule applies to all sexually intact cattle and bison 18 months of age or older, all dairy cattle, cattle and bison of any age used for rodeo or recreation events, and cattle or bison of any age used for shows or exhibitions. It also stated in the report that the rule requires official ear tags to be visually and electronically readable for official use for interstate movement of certain cattle and bison, and revises and clarifies certain record requirements related to cattle. USDA did note that they will continue to provide ear tags to producers free of charge to jumpstart efforts to enable the fastest possible response to foreign animal disease. And I think one of the things to note specifically on this order is USDA did note that this will take effect 180 days after publication in the Federal Register. And so one note this for livestock producers, but obviously, you know, keep in mind this is a fluid situation, right? So it's changing rather quickly, especially this last week. We've seen a lot of those changes. So for those livestock producers out there, please be aware of any potential changes that USDA is issuing. So on a similar note with the HPAI discussion, there's been some significant impacts to the poultry sector. Currently, USDA APHIS has reported about 11 million birds affected by HPAI since the start of this year alone. A majority of those cases have actually been in commercial egg layers. The reported cases in commercial eggs have all recently occurred just during the month of April. So in April alone, there was a case of 2 million birds affected in a commercial egg layer flock in Texas. And then over the last 2 weeks, we've had 3 separate cases of 2 million birds each that have occurred in the state of Michigan. Okay, so if you combine both Texas and Michigan, and we've had over 8 million commercial egg layer birds that have been affected by HPAI. So I bring this up as just a note because we had a similar impact in 2022 with HPAI to commercial egg layers. And this did impact egg prices as we got into the summer months. So just a note to keep an eye out on those egg prices moving forward here.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Problem that I have is the student debt forgiveness. Mm-hmm.
Senate Appropriations Subcommittee on Education reviewing the President's FY25 budget request. Education Secretary Miguel Cardona hearing from Joe Manchin from West Virginia.
First of all, we have a bill out called the Smarter Debt Act. And when people call my office, we give them 50 different variations of how they can reduce their debt without being given away. They can work it off. They get paid, but they can work their debt off. I'll give you a perfect example. All these smart young people that work in our offices, when they come here and they have a one-year contract, they get basically, we pay, since they're working, we need them here. They get paid while they're working, but then we pay also their debt commitment. After 10 years, it's totally forgiven. But you're not telling, no one's doing anything. You know how long it took us to find all 50 categories, whether it be in health professions, whether it's in public service. There are so many ways, scientific research. general repayment, everything. There's so many things, but yet we end up giving $620 billion of debt cancellation has already been implemented, including $275 billion from President Biden's new income-driven repayment, and then we're talking about doing another $750. We're spending more on giving money away than we ever did on education. It makes no sense to me at all, and you all have done nothing as the Department of Education showing me how I can take this burden off of me while I still get paid and I'm contributing to society. We have no financial requirements whatsoever, literacy. When a student goes into the college, as I'm understanding it, you please correct me if I'm wrong, they'll go there and they say, how much, what is your family's income? And you get the Stafford loan. So you can borrow. They said, well, you can borrow up to $12,000 with your family loan, with your family income. They might only need six, but they'll take all 12. And then most of them, majority fall out in 2 years. They think it's all free money because they have no payments at all. There's no accrued interest whatsoever. But when it comes time to pay the piper, it hits them hard because we don't require any financial literacy on the front end. This is stupid. And we just keep piling it on like there's no end to it. Your debt is $34.5 trillion and growing every day. And we're not going to be able to burden it. Education. And we're dumbing down on top of that. Students aren't getting any better. And how about the kids that don't go to school? In our little state, there's an awful lot of kids that can't go to school. They come to us and says, you mean I'm working and paying my taxes and you're giving it away to people who went to college and had a good time and now they don't want to pay it back? Had a better chance for an opportunity, don't want to pay it back? We've got to answer. And you want to know why the rural America and urban and rural America is getting further and further apart? It's because rural America is being left behind and getting screwed. That's exactly why. So, sir, I don't know what in the hell you all are doing, but this makes no sense to me. If you would just take a look at our Smarter Debt Act, we put it all together for you. It'll be able, you can put it on your website tomorrow and start showing people how to take the burden of high student loan debt off of their back by giving services back that we need in so many areas of our government, so many areas of our country. Everyone needs it, every state, but you all don't do it. Did you know about what we're talking about, the smarter?
The folks that we're providing debt relief to, sir, are public servants, are veterans that have served our public and have done it not to become rich, but to make their community better. People who have been taken advantage of by universities or colleges.
I agree with all that.
So we're trying to fix a system to make higher education more affordable.
You have to you're the education department.
Right.
You have to educate people on what's available.
Right.
The education of basically the congressionally authorized student loan forgiveness programs. It's out there. 50 different categories where a student can say, oh, I'm going to go in this education. I'm going to work over here. I'm going to go in health. I'm going to go in scientific research. And I'll go work over there because that takes care of my debt. They're paying for my college tuition. But no, they go out and whatever happens, because they have no idea, it comes back to roost on them, and I don't know. I'm done.
And New York State's Young Farmers Loan Forgiveness Incentive Program does just that. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
GAO just announced, well, announced what, a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, eighth year in a row, the Pentagon is unauditable.
Had you heard that? That's Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
They can't audit it. They have no idea what the inventories are, all the things we should know in an audit. Why do we tolerate that? Why isn't this body losing its mind over something like that? Just from a national security standpoint, how do you know? Maybe they need more. Maybe they need less. Maybe you have too much of something. We don't know. But you walk around campus here, and there's all sorts of people in uniforms and all sorts of people from defense contractors saying, we need more of this. How do we know? We can't audit you. Turns out that a couple of the biggest and a couple small ones, audit companies, CPA companies, compliance companies, have come up with audit AI, artificial intelligence that crawls through the books, crawls through the inventories, crawls through the asset lists. You could use AI to audit the Pentagon. And if that works, you could use AI to look for fraud in Medicare, Medicaid, and other programs. How about durable equipment fraud that you read about so often? You could use AI for that. Right now, there's been an experiment, and I haven't gotten the final report how well it worked, but when you called the IRS during this tax season, there's a very good chance the individual you were talking to was a ChatGPT, a chat computer. And my understanding is the satisfaction was higher with talking to the AI because it stayed on the phone with you longer and would work through helping you fill out your form. Those are ways to use technology to make this government smaller. I've already done whole presentations on the morality of this government using its resources to cure diseases because it turns out it's really good economics. It's moral. The knockoff effects, what they call the second degree, third degree, fourth degree, you know, there's a whole series of these things you calculate. Family formation. Less people dying. Remember, we're about to have, I believe we're having the fifth year in a row where prime age males' life expectancy is shorter. But this body will knife each other when we're just trying to add technology to telehealth, because it will force someone out there to change their business model and maybe also find a better, faster, cheaper way to do it because they have to compete against technology. I will argue disruption and adopting the technology is the only path I can mathematically come up to crash this debt or stabilize it. Because we just need to stabilize it so the debt doesn't grow faster than the economy. But to do that, you're going to disrupt bureaucracies, you're going to disrupt incumbent business models, and that's the way America's supposed to work. There's a reason you didn't go to Blockbuster Video last weekend. The technology changed. You don't stand in line for your little silver disc anymore. You go home and hit a button, now you have how many streaming services? If they had hired enough lobbyists, if Blockbuster Video hired enough lobbyists, this place probably would have slowed down the internet for them. And that's mean, but I'm trying to get people to think, we got to get ourselves to push. We got to be willing to disrupt, because I will argue, we're Americans. We're supposed to do things better every day. And the cures, the changing the way government works, making our economy constantly evolve, become better, faster, cheaper, more affordable, more part of the American. It basically comes down to a single line. Prosperity is moral. And if you looked at the inflation data, the new GDP data that came out on Friday, we're on the cusp of going back to something horrible from almost 40 years ago called stagflation. That's immoral. This body can make that not happen, and we could make this a prosperous future. I believe we only have 3 to 5 years to embrace the disruption. But if we don't do it, we've engaged in a really immoral act here.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We actually work very closely together on different aspects of you know, the cotton industry and some of the, you know, what the needs are for producers.
There's a handful of organizations representing the cotton industry, whether it's National Cotton Council, Cotton Board, Cotton Incorporated. Sean Wade is with Plains Cotton Growers.
You mentioned the National Cotton Council, for instance, so that's our national organization that is actually an organization that represents the different segments of the cotton industry. So you have, you know, a gender segment, a producer segment, merchant segment, manufacturers, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, we have the National Cotton Council handling kind of a national scope from a policy perspective, and then they kind of work on the promotion side through a subsidiary that we would identify as Cotton Council International. Which helps kind of the U.S. cotton industry market itself abroad and into those international markets that are so important to us. And then kind of parallel to Cotton Council International, you would have the Cotton Board, which is the kind of quasi-governmental entity that helps oversee the cotton research and promotion program that all producers kind of contribute to during the course of marketing their cotton. A portion of the value of that bale is submitted to the Cotton Board for the Cotton Research and Promotion Program. And then the Cotton Board would then in turn turn over and oversee the operations of Cotton Incorporated, which is our domestic research and promotion arm for the cotton industry. So they're the folks, you know, that are in charge of kind of helping us market our cotton to our domestic users, and then also look after a significant research program to kind of help the cotton industry stay on the cutting edge technology-wise. On both the production and the manufacturing sides of things. So we have a very broad industry that's very well represented with some, you know, real specialization, I think, is the best way to think of it in terms of, you know, different organizations that kind of all work cohesively together, but then work on, you know, different aspects, different needs that producers may have to be successful in their operations and in their marketing. So, you know, tying all that together, our regional cotton producer organizations, like the Plains Cotton Growers in Texas, we have actually 9 regional cotton producer organizations, Plains Cotton Growers, South Texas Cotton and Grain, Rolling Plains Cotton Growers, Southern Rolling Plains. So we have, you know, quite a few different regions in the state of Texas where we're localized producer groups kind of work together to then identify leadership that then kind of moves up into those leadership positions within Cotton Incorporated, within the Cotton Board, within the National Cotton Council and Cotton Council International. So it's a very grassroots-based kind of structure where the leadership is identified through groups like Plains Cotton Growers, and then those individuals move up and represent our local neighbors, our local growing regions at the national level, and work on common policy issues for producers across the belt. So it's a great industry structure, and certainly one that's lended itself to a lot of success over the years. So it can be a little confusing at times. I certainly understand, but I think a thing to understand and know is that we have good leadership and good producers that are willing to take the times out of their operations to volunteer and serve on these different leadership positions at both the regional, state, and national levels to really make sure that our industry continues to move forward.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
In the livestock sector, it's kind of interesting. The cattle in specific have been a bit of a bounce for the last few weeks, but nothing outstanding.
Bob Maurer, Manduka Trading, Chicago.
The basic move has been probably a $6 range over the last, I don't know, say 4 weeks or so. So, you know, there's no, in my opinion at this point, a big pending move ready to happen in the cattle market. So we'll see how it plays out. I think it's just more about the week-to-week opinion on how business is doing out there. There's a couple things that are working for the cattle market would be recently, that is, cash, right? So it's been recovering a bit. Last week, the USDA box beef cutout was up about a buck half mid-session, ended up at 297 and change. That was up from about a little shy of 296 the previous week, so gaining there. Five-day, five-area weighted average price was just shy of 184, coming up from 182.5 the previous week, so gained a buck and a half there, so that's a good thing. And then in terms of the cash, the southern cattle last week traded at about steady. And then the northern dress gained about $2, trading around 294 for the most part on the weighted average basis. So steady to better in cash in that particular aspect, but better in terms of that 5 day, five area weighted average in the box beef cutout. So as long as the cash looks healthy, you would think that the sector would look healthy, and the market's done a decent job over the last few weeks kind of recognizing that. In terms of the other impacts in the marketplace, well, looking at a bigger picture and zooming out, we've got some heavier weight cattle sitting out there, and that's boosting beef production. We'll have to eat through that. There is a tendency at this time of the year for more cattle to come to market, become available, so we'll see how the market's able to absorb that. Indicative of that, I guess, would be last week's slaughter coming in at 613,000 head versus the previous 620. So in terms of the throughput, we want to keep it strong and robust. We don't like to see those decent-sized downticks like that. We'll see if that's just a one-off or if it turns around. But we also are coming up in a time of year where the seasonality takes a bit of a bullish view because of heading into the barbecue season. So we'll see when the market wants to also start discounting that and maybe providing some support and pushing up a little bit. Again, I don't really expect any kind of drastic moves at the moment. Anything's possible. If we look at tendencies in the past as some kind of precursor for what could happen again in the future, round about this time of the year, say going into the first week or so of May, you usually see a little bit of an uptick in price. And then after that first week, going into the end of month of May, you see a decent move to the downside, or at least some pressure coming in. So short move up, and then on the tail, 70% of the month of May, a little pressure to the downside. So we'll see if that comes into fruition again. And for feeder cattle, again, looking back at some of the historical tendencies, more of a sloppy look. It depends on which time frame you want to look at, but generally speaking, it'll be sideways for the first week and a half or so, and then it's pretty much a coin toss as to whether or not it's going to be weakness towards the back half of the month or strength on the back half of the month. So we'll see how that plays out, and I think it'll probably be more a factor of what's going on with the grain prices come mid-May. as well as what's happening with the cash cattle land, to kind of give us a better idea of which one of those two directions it could take.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We are seeking to address a need that we've heard from across the country related to more farm labor and stable, affordable, suitable housing for that workforce.
What USDA Rural Development Undersecretary Basil Gooden is referring to is a recent notice of funding, $48 million for both off-farm and on-farm labor housing.
When we talk about the farm labor workforce, it's individuals that are either currently involved in agriculture or farm labor or retired from farm labor, given some restrictions, or disabled from farm labor and their families.
Funding applicants have until July 3rd to submit proposals for the off-farm labor housing program with details via the Federal Register. On-farm labor housing applications are accepted on an ongoing basis with information available at www.rd.usda.gov via the Programs and Service tab on the homepage. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.